Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q3 FY23 conference call of Newgen Software Technologies Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Deepti Mehra Chugh. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'm Deepti Mehra Chugh, Investor Relations, Newgen Software Technologies Limited, and I welcome you all to the Q3 FY23 results of the company. Wishing you all a very happy new year. Joining with me today on our call is our management, Mr. Diwakar Nigam, Chairman and Managing Director, Newgen, Mr. Varadarajan, Whole-time Director, Mr. Virender Jeet, Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Arun Kumar Gupta, Chief Finance Officer. Before we move on to the discussion, let me highlight that this call may contain certain forward-looking statements concerning Newgen's future business prospects and profitability, which are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, and as actual results could materially vary from these forward-looking statements. Past performance may not be indicative of future performance. The company does not undertake to make any announcement in case any of these forward-looking statements become materially incorrect or update any forward-looking statements made from time to time by or on behalf of the company. For any further details, you may please refer to the investor relations section of our website. I will now hand over to Mr. Nigam for presentation of the results, which will be followed by a Q&A. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone, and wishing all of you a very happy new year. Thank you for joining us today for our Q3 financial results call. 2022 has been an exciting year for us. We completed 30 years of Newgen. We had a new look with the new logo launch. Most importantly, we were excited to interact, engage, and celebrate with our customers and stakeholders in person through various events, leaving behind the phase of COVID. We are happy to share our progress and performance in the third quarter. This is our first quarter with revenue exceeding rupees 250 crores at Newgen. We witnessed a strong revenue growth of 26% year-on-year. All our geographies witnessed growth for us. Our traditional market continued to be the drivers of our growth. India, EMEA witnessed a growth of 40% and 27%, with good business from both existing and new customers. APAC and US region witnessed a growth of 18% and 13%. We are seeing continued adoption of subscription-based business model. The overall subscription revenues have been growing steadily at a healthy pace of 37% YOY and were at rupees 84 crores in Q3. These are the building blocks of our long-term sustainable revenue. The annuity revenues for the quarter were rupees 154 crores, witnessing a growth of 38% YOY. The annuity revenues comprise 61% of our total revenue in Q3. It is noteworthy that these growth numbers incorporate the continuing transition to subscription from license-based model and is expected to result in faster growth and higher revenue visibility over coming quarters. The quarter was marked by 16 new logo wins spread across geographies. We had significant deals in existing as well as new accounts during the quarter, including cloud deals with full service financial institution in the Southeast region in America, license-based project for a financial institution in America providing offering for life and health insurance, annuities, pensions, real estate, banking, and investment links. In India, Mutual Fund, large size projects from a leading public sector bank and a private sector bank. Mid-size projects in Singapore for a global financial services group. Projects for one of the fastest growing banks in Africa region. Moving to update on our offering and opportunities. Our platform are well equipped for handling large variety of complex processes and use cases, helping our customers in meeting their end-to-end digital journeys. Mutual Fund platform has capabilities for automating complex processes and content services at scale. The AIML capabilities of Number Theory are now fully integrated with our product platform and philosophy. Our trade finance platform is also receiving good response from our customers. As mentioned in our press release earlier during the day, we are excited that for yet another year, we have been positioned as a niche player in 2023 Gartner's Magic Quadrant for enterprise low-code application platform. While many platforms are offering more citizen and simple low-code application development, our low-code application development platform provides for enterprise-wide large-scale application development that need to be scalable and robust. We will continue to work on our long-term platform and cloud roadmap. On the operational front, operation has stabilized now. We continue to invest in strengthening our teams wherever required, including campus recruitment and lateral hiring. Our focus is on adding fresh talent, working on their development needs, and making them productive in a short period of time. A lot of emphasis is put across on training and developmental work of our employees, with regular training across various aspects, including product, business management skills, team development, etc. We are trying to build large capacity at a reasonable cost to deliver large business opportunities we are seeing in our geographies. On the sales and marketing front, business travel has fully resumed, leading to in-person customer interaction. Following the customer meets in Mumbai in September, we had successful in-person customer meets in Dubai and Delhi after a break of 3 years. The response received was tremendous. Participation included existing and new global customers, system integrator, and large consulting firms. It served as a good platform for showcasing our product roadmap and customer success stories, as well as enabling customers, system integrators, and consultants network to provide their inputs, understanding, and product capabilities, collaborating and exchanging notes. In the long term, we believe partners will strengthen and drive our growth along with the direct sales channel. We are rigorously working towards enabling these channels. Our profit after tax for the quarter was stable at rupees 48 crore compared to Q3 FY22. During the year, R&D expenses comprised 10% of revenue and sales and marketing expense comprised 22%. In the first 9 months of the year, our total revenues were 669 crores, witnessing a growth of 22% YOY. Our profit after tax was rupees 98 crores. On the cost front, this year is marked by the continuing impact of elevated employee costs, higher costs on account of increased go-to-market initiatives, return in person events and gradually normalizing travel expenses. We are continuously investing in widening the employee pyramid by higher intake at bottom of the pyramid and working on their training and development to make them productive quickly. We see large-scale development needs in the future. On the cash flow and balance sheet front, our net cash generated from the operation activities was rupees 100 crores for the 9 months. Our net trade receivables were rupees 283 crores at the end of December, which resulted in a net DSO of 115 days. Our compelling proposition, value proposition in the market includes our low-code platform approach, which is capable of handling complex content and process requirements at a scale, as well as the growing opportunity for digital transformation across organizations. We are thankful for the continuing support and faith shown by our customers and for giving us newer opportunities to showcase the immense value our solution can bring to their organization. Our cloud and subscription revenue continue to grow at fast pace, helping us in developing a long-term, sustainable, enable business model. We will continue with our investment in our people and their development to build a future-ready organization. We are now open to Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one now. The first question is from the line of Mihir Manohar from Carnelian Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for giving the opportunity, and congratulations on a good set of numbers. Sir, I largely wanted to understand, you know, your traction on the trade finance platform. I mean, given the fact you launched this platform in September, so how is the traction over there? And, you know, what kind of inquiries or what kind of conversations are you having over there? And my second question was on the GSI. I mean, you know, how did GSI pan out this particular quarter? And my third question was on the margins. I mean, you know, we have seen sequential improvement in margins, but despite that, since travel cost has normalized, or still on a YOY basis, it is down 500 basis points. So I mean, we as investors, how should we see margins for the balance part of the year and even for the next year as well? Yeah, those were the questions.
Thanks, Mihir, and I'll try to answer them one by one. See, on the trade finance, what we launched a few quarters back, I think we have developed a very, you know, promising funnel across all regions, and especially in Middle East, India, APAC, the funnel is. In fact, we have also got some interest in U.S. and certain customers, so we are going slow because right now we are looking at also our capability to execute on that front. We closed a deal on trade finance in this quarter as well, and we have at least two or three more closures left for this quarter to come. So broadly, you know, these deals are substantial in size and are very different in size and execution compared to our traditional size. So we are looking at not large numbers out here, but potential to close 3, 4, 5 deals a year is also a substantial jump to our revenue. So we are very hopeful and we are running it very aggressively. On the GSI front, we continue to invest in that, and I think we are happy that the funnel overall keeps on improving out there. This quarter, we have been able to close 3 deals with GSIs, 2 in US and 1 in Australia. And though it's not still, you know, it's very long way to go in terms of where what our expectation from GSI is that, but it continues to grow, but does continue to grow at only at an organic pace rather than a pace which could disrupt the market for us. On the margin side, you're right. I think we have, you know, come back to that previous margin, which was prior to COVID area on account of normalization of travel, a normalization of also operational costs. And also, as Mr. Nigam said, I think there's a lot of cost pressure on in terms of talent management, wages. That keeps to be one of the most important challenges still we are facing in terms of, you know, managing the talent. So what we had indicated that last year's margins were not any benchmark to sustain because a lot of our operationals and business activities were not being conducted. But on an even a near term, in Q4 as well as next year, I think we aim to achieve a margin percentage of net margin between 17% to 18% and EBITDA between 22% to 23%. Now we are at roughly around 14.5% to 15% for 9 months. Q4 is generally a very strong quarter for us. And if we are able to meet the historical trends of Q4 and meet that growth rate, we should be very close to our estimates of what we had estimated at the beginning of year. Does that answer your question?
Sure. So that is really helpful. Just on the trade finance side, I mean, you mentioned that the deal sizes are higher here. So I mean, if you could throw some more light, I mean, what kind of deal sizes are there? And just on the differentiation side, I mean, you know, there is Fedonov also, which is offering this particular platform. So what is the differentiation over there, over here? What is our right to win in this particular offering?
So generally, the so trade finances eventually, while the traditional deals which we are closing close between 400-500K, the trade deals are roughly in between $1 million, $2 million upfront. But the long tail revenue in them is very strong because these projects take large amount of teams, a large amount of engineering activities to manage them over the lifetime. So the lifetime account value may be multiple times than the traditional size for us.
So the upfront revenue is $1 to $2 million?
Yes.
Okay, sure, yeah. And just on the right to win side?
Yeah, so I think, see, like, we are the challengers in this market, and luckily we have got some of the best cases and customers eventually. So we have seen that there's a lot of activity on the trade portal and trade origination, which has been completely not, you know, addressed previously. And our technology of process automation, low code, and content, strengthened content, provides a very compelling value prop to the customer out there. So this is an area which people are finding a lot of interest in, and, you know, coming back to us. We've been lucky to get at least first four or five customers which are the marquee names, and that is building strong credentials for us. But every market we'll have to really discover. I think we have touched so far on India and Middle East. We have not really got deals still in Europe, US or UK. So I think we'll have to go and discover that as we enter those markets.
Sure. Yeah, that's it for my side. Yeah. Thank you very much, and best of luck for your future endeavors.
Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harsha from Dimensional Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, sir. So my question is on the Indian market. So this quarter has seen a sort of sharp increase in the revenues. We were around 65 crore sort of run rate, and this quarter we saw around 86-87 crore. So just wanted to know, is there any one-off in this quarter, or is this the run rate we would maintain going ahead for Indian market?
So, Harsha, thank you. Harsha, this, you know, Indian market keeps on surprising us. Every time we say that it's going to slow down, it keeps on coming, bouncing. And every 2-3 years, it delivers very strong performance. I think last year and this year, we are in that cycle that India market is delivering performance about 30% for us. Though in a particular quarter, a steep jump can be because of some license deals coming in, which could have upfront revenue realization. But overall, if you look at for the whole 9-month period also, it's a substantial growth. So the 9-month period is also almost probably close to 40% growth. So we think right now the market in financial services and also in other sectors is really strong. People are investing very aggressively for growing their businesses. That's where we are able to get a lot of renewals of large contracts from existing accounts as well as penetrate new logos. So I would not call it one-off. There is no one-off major deal which could disrupt the revenue. But yes, some amount of fluctuation in a quarter can happen because of large license deal. But on a year, I think for us to look at regional, I keep on saying that it's very important to look at an annual result for a regional performance rather than a quarterly, because the numbers are still... And the numbers are in range of 30, 40, 50 crores. A single deal can change the whole percentage game. But if you look at a 9-month result, India has been very strong. So we still feel that this year is going to be very strong for India.
Okay. Just if I may follow up on this, is the investment coming from the fintech side, the smaller emerging companies, or the investment has been across all segments, even the larger banks and NBFCs are participating?
Predominantly banks and NBFCs. Not fintechs, because fintechs are generally IT shops on their own. So the automation platforms which we provide to banks and financial services, fintechs are generally creating most of the technology in-house or having a very alternate way of doing that. So customers in public sector, customers in NBFCs, private banks are our primary drivers of this growth.
Okay. And what is the outlook for the SaaS companies now globally? I mean, post-COVID, the industry was gung-ho. There's a lot of funding coming around. But with the funding squeezing a bit, a lot of companies going out of the business, and even the employees' cost have gone down quite a bit. So is the buy versus build narrative still going on? I mean, SaaS segment will continue to be strong, or people are shifting towards building their own team and building their own software?
Yeah, so I'm not probably the expert to comment on what's going to happen globally to SaaS companies, but I can tell this buy versus build narrative has been there for the last 15-20 years. More and more customers, depending on the nature of business, and more complex things are coming into a, you know, buy phase rather than build. Because just the time to market and the advantage to, you know, get something quickly launched for their customers is very, very important. So I think broadly, if I can answer on that buy too, there is a huge interest to look at products, look at ready-made things which customers can absorb. And really, customers want to focus on their business rather than really large engineering cycles. So that way, we find the same traction. And it's true for our own offerings as well. More and more customers are taking our ready-made solution accelerators and deploying them for complex businesses around that. But SaaS companies is a very different business. I would refrain from commenting on that because that's a...
Yeah. Okay, get it. Thank you. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Ankur from Jefferies. Please go ahead. The current participant has left the question queue. We'll move on to the next question from the line of S. Chatterjee from AS Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. My first question,
Mr. Chatterjee, your audio is not clear from your line. Please use the handset.
Hello? Yeah, am I audible?
Yes, sir. Please
go
ahead.
Thanks. So annuity is now currently 60% of our business, so SaaS, ATC, and support. So if one of our clients in this segment wants to cut costs and switch to a different vendor, what is the switching cost? I mean, what is the time of problem they will be facing if they switch their vendor? How sticky are they?
Sorry for that. Just give me one sec. So you're absolutely right. You know, the annuity keeps on growing, and part of we have a, you know, constant endeavor to grow the annuity business. But, you know, to understand, we are still in the enterprise business space where cost of engaging for a vendor or cost of engaging with the customer is very high because these systems are very deeply integrated in customer ecosystems, integrated with core bankings, ERPs, multiple vendors, running core business activities. So technically everything can be switched, but we have seen almost negligible switching over the last 15 years. So what we sell to customers are their primary business solution. Like in banks, we become probably the second most important system after the core. Same is true in insurance, same is true in financial services or shared services. We are the core shared services platform. Technically, it can be switched, but enterprise products, if they are running fine and the customer's technology is not obsolete, they continue to be used. So I don't think the switching happens because of, you know, that people get a better deal or an offer. The switching only happens that if your technology stack becomes obsolete or you are not able to meet the customer business requirement. And so far, I think we have been ahead of the curve of that. That's not been the challenge.
Thank you, sir. My last question is, today we are a $100 million company and we had an aspiration to go probably $500 million in probably next 5, 6, 7 years. So what are the challenges in it and what will be the growth drivers? And I mean, whether GSI, corporate finance platform, or anything else?
So, see, we are very confident with the products and the solutions and customer referenceability we have. The potential is there. Of course, there are a couple of strategies which we need to execute. And one of them has been what we've been working over some time over GSI, where we have built the ecosystem, but we are still, you know, on the results, it's still slow. I'm not saying that the results are not there, but they're coming at a slow pace. The other part of it is really getting strong foothold in mature market and Fortune 2000 clients. We are a GSI strategy, but we are also augmenting that with our own go-to markets, whether we are opening subsidiaries in Australia, U.K., U.S. And so these are now, of course, it's a very organic process. I think things start picking up. Last 2 years on COVID, I think we have been slightly left behind on that initiative, not able to execute really on those business plans. But I think this year we have started showing the business momentum. And if we are able to keep this momentum for next 6-7 quarters, we should be able to really create a direct linkage between a timeline by which we can reach there.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you. No more questions.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ankur from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi. Am I audible now?
Yes, you are. Ankur.
Yeah, I'm sorry for the last time. Wish you a happy new year and thanks for the opportunity. So could you provide some color on your various markets that you have and the outlook for each of these markets? Especially US, I see that there has been a 13% growth this year. So what has been the growth in terms of constant currency? And there has been a doubling in terms of your SaaS revenue. So what has led to that? So my first question is this.
Yeah, so Ankur, happy new year to you. On the various markets, I think one thing you can see through the results clearly what's happening in the emerging markets, which have been strong for us, continue to be performing very strongly. India is driving that growth, but also Middle East on the value terms, if you look at on 9 months and year base, will become the primary growth driver for that. APAC also is becoming very strong. It is, from hardly being 4-7% of our business, it has started going to more like 14-15% of our business. And with Australia subsidiary also kicking in from next year, in terms of, we should be able to build a much more stronger APAC. US, we have pivoted in strategy for a couple of times. We are deliberately walking out on some amount of business which was not really leading to long-term growth and margins. So we are pivoting on that. So, we have recorded a growth of 13%, but it's very weak, compared to what we have been able to traditionally do from US. So US is one of our bigger challenges right now, which we are trying to solve. Coming back to the SaaS and growth of SaaS, one thing we should, we started last year in November, now it's almost like, 4 quarters. We started deliberately shifting a lot of our deals to subscription-based deals. And which also led to, we didn't have a lot of revenue realized in those quarters. Now that revenue is coming in slowly, you will see the subscription and the SaaS-based revenue growing at a much more compounding speed. In fact, in this quarter, out of 16 logos, 9 logos which we have won are completely subscription-based logos. So, they will start adding into future quarter revenue. So on the order book size, we have a far better performance than what is also reflecting on the top line, because of the deferred revenue coming from subscription deals. So it's very natural on the SaaS growing at this speed, and we think that we can continue to grow the SaaS at a much higher speed over the next 4-5 quarters. Does that answer your question, Ankur?
Yes, that's very helpful. And on the other, I see the other expenses have risen quite sharply this quarter. Anything around that, like what led to that? I understand business travel is one part of it, but do you expect it to go further higher incrementally or sequentially for the next quarter and also for the next year? How do you see that line item?
Yeah, so, I think generally our other expenses will have significant growth compared to last year, because on account of normalization of travel, operating costs, And also, more marketing activities which we are starting. Other expenses will go, sequentially up slightly, because, for next quarter, they may not go substantially up. But as we grow in and start investing more in travel and marketing, they may sequentially go up. They will keep pace with the growth of the company. But the base is pretty large. We do expect to spend more on marketing, more on travel next year. It will go up. But the jumps will not be comparable to this year's jumps, because this year's jump is on a very artificial base.
All right. So and if I did catch your earlier comment right, your EBITDA margin that you expect, 22-23% was for next year, right? That is the kind of number that you're looking at, right?
Next year also our attempt for this year was also around the same percentage. we are having some amount of challenge because we are at 14%, but also historically, Q4 is always a larger quarter for us and more because the costs almost are factored in. Q4 on the cost front is not going to be substantially different from the Q3. But any increased percentage of top-line growth will completely reflect in the margin side.
Sure. So the cost would be flat, and you are planning to, and the revenue would be, is hopefully comparatively higher. That's what you're saying.
Yes. And that has been the traditional, if you look at last 5 years' data, this is exactly. Most of the margin actually comes in Q3 and Q4, and predominantly in Q4.
Okay. Thanks. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Devang from IDBI Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yeah, Devang, please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you for taking my question. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. So I have a couple of questions. One is, what is your CC growth in the quarter? Second, will you be able to surpass the Q3 performance in Q4 and FY24? What led to the dip in government revenues? I have two more questions, but I'll come after your answer.
Okay. Just give me, let me hear. So on the constant currency of Q3, we're at around 19.5%, if I'm right. Yes, around 19.5%. That is on the Q3 versus Q4. Historically, Q4 has been always stronger than Q3. But Q3, since we have done a delivery at 26%, we do expect the base for our business keeps on improving because of the subscription revenue which we are building. And our attempt is to have a stronger Q4 compared to Q3. But how strong, I think that will come as when the results unfold. But yes, it's not that the Q4 can be weaker than Q3. It will be strong. On the government revenue, I think right now, government for the nine-month period, let me just give me one sec.
70%.
Government for the nine-month period has grown by 70%. And for the period of Q3 versus, it's -6.4%. That's why I said, the quarter numbers, when you break further into verticals and segments and regions, they become so small that a single deal makes the percentage look odd. So it will be better to look at either nine-month or a 12-month number to look at. So this year, I think the banking, government, and insurance are still performing strong. We are slightly becoming weaker on the shared service and manufacturing side, which we are trying to recover.
Okay. Cool. And on the FY24 side, will you be able to maintain the FY23 kind of revenue growth?
See, our endeavor is to even exceed that because we have, as we said, we have an aspiration of investing aggressively for growth. And depending on if the market is favorable and we are able to execute our plan, there is no reason why we can't exceed the growth this year.
How much was travel as a percentage of revenue this quarter or nine-month basis, whichever is? And with increase in direct sales, how much the cost will increase? Despite that, you will be able to maintain that 22% to 23% band?
So I'm telling you, see, Nick, so I think this year you should look at what has happened in terms of whatever additional cost of 20 crores on travel or SG&A or manpower cost has all got into eating in the margin. But historically, since now the next base of margin has been set up, we have a travel of roughly around 30 to 40 crores going to be this year. And also SG&A costs have been, we are operational on almost 80, 90% of our capacity. So now the cost growth for even historical, for any X percent of growth, our cost only grew by almost half of X on the manpower side. That has been the traditional because, as we generate high gross margin business, roughly around, our 62 to 65% is our gross margin, historical as well. So there is a lot of operating leverage in terms of multiple revenue streams, ATS, license, SaaS, we don't have any direct costs associated with. So for getting 25% growth, we don't need to spend 25% more cost. We need to spend incrementally more like 13, 14% of the growth cost. So there is going to be operating leverage. And I think next year, even at growth rates similar to this year, we should be able to expand the operating leverage.
Okay. And what was the contribution of GSI to revenues? And is your US margins, which you did this quarter, is that sustainable going forward?
I think quarterly margins is not the right way to look at. I think annual margins is what I think we should be able to do better in U.S. because our U.S. Q1 and Q2 were weak. Q3 and Q4, if they become strong, we should be able to restore some margins. But next year, we don't expect U.S. to be weak at all. We expect U.S. to be a growth driver for the company. And once it's a growth driver, there's no reason why the margin contribution will not be happening there.
What will be the contribution of GSI this quarter?
I think this quarter, we see GSI percentage revenue is still very small because we look at partner revenue, which is roughly between 20%-25% of our revenue. But the GSI is now, we look at number of deals, which GSI is really important. So this quarter, 3 deals were bought in GSI out of 16 deals we got.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for taking my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak Poddar from Sapphire Capital.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much, sir, for the opportunity. So first up, I just wanted to understand, I mean, the comment that you made in the to the last participant that for 25% revenue growth, our cost will grow only at 13-14%, right? It will not grow proportionately.
Yes.
So ideally, then if we stand today, if we take this quarter as a base, I mean, already our PAT margin is 19%. So ideally, then our PAT margin, if we have to look at maybe 3 years down the line, it should cross 22-25% in that range. Ideally, if our revenue grows at 25%, whereas our cost grow at only 13-14%.
I try to answer in a simple, I think slightly more complex subject. You are absolutely right. The business keeps on expanding margins at both gross level as we expand and scale. But then what happens is those direct costs don't grow at the same level, but we keep on growing our costs in sales and marketing and R&D.
Okay.
Because as if you want to compete at the global space, right now our sales and marketing costs are at 22%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you look at global product companies, they go all the way up to 40%, depending on if we can hit the high growth. So when you look at net margins, it's also a function of business. Am I trying to pre-invest in growth? Am I trying to, you know, match it along with the growth rate? So sometimes when we see clearly that there is an opportunity to grow and invest in markets, then we go and invest in those markets. So we increase our sales and marketing and R&D expense.
Oh.
So that's why we are saying that, you know, being listed in India, we endeavor to at least maintain that kind of a margin. But then as a business, of course, can have deliver much higher margin.
Oh, okay, understood. So the net margin of 17-18%, which you mentioned, is considering all these factors, right? I mean, in spite of
considering all those factors. Yes.
Okay. And $500 million in next 5 to 6 years effectively means you have to grow at a CAGR of 25% plus for next 5 to 6 years, right? So that's what we are looking at.
I think much higher than that, and for that, you know, we have to, multiple things have to kick in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the GSI has to kick in. The sales percentage contribution from US and Europe has to come to almost 60% of the revenue, because the larger addressable market is in those areas, and that's what we are spending on marketing for, expanding regions out there, investing. And those will be the investment-led activities which we'll do over the next 3-4 years.
Okay. So that's a very high growth we are talking. I mean, much higher than 25%. Maybe if I have to assume 30% CAGR over the next 5 to 6 years. So what can go wrong according to you? I mean, it's a big growth we are talking sustainably for next 6 years, right?
Yes, see, the only thing which can go right is we end up doing it, and everything else can go wrong. So I think our ability to penetrate mature market clients, our ability to build brands in mature markets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see there's a challenge on the technology stack. Our products are very well recognized globally for last 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the kind of customer base we have, we are able to stay ahead in the market and really prove our credentials and keep on updating the product at that investment.
Mm-hmm.
Our ability to sell, market and position ourselves is the biggest challenge. And especially we have to pivot from emerging market player to a mature market player. There are multiple activities associated. GSI is one initiative, and we are also looking at multiple initiatives. And at some time, maybe we'll have to look at also inorganic steps to complement.
Okay. So, any kind of inorganic steps also kind of factored in this $500 million that we have taken as a vision in next 6 years?
Yeah. So it's a vision. So nothing is left out of it.
Okay. So that is kind of included in it.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, sure, sure. That's it from my side. Thank you so much. All the very best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of VP Rajesh from Banyan Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. The first question, just you called out about the Indian business being very strong on the growth side. So if you can just elaborate a little bit more as to why we are winning in the Indian market. Is it because the banks, etc., are becoming more automated, or are we replacing somebody else? Some color on that will be helpful.
Yeah, so one thing is clearly, so India, we have been traditionally very strong in all the banks, insurance companies, and most of the shared services. And so almost all enterprises end up using us in one way or the other. So what's happened lately over the last 2 years, especially in financial services, there's a lot of money being spent on digitization, automation, and also transforming their business models to digital. So we have been one of their, you know, prominent players, and we are getting our share. Also, on the other hand, what we are doing, as we are getting into any vertical, we keep on, you know, our extending our portfolio of products in that vertical. So like in banking, we started with digital onboarding and lending origination. Now we have gone more and more deep. Now we are doing complete digital lending journeys for major banks, and those projects are substantial different size. And that opportunity is opening in multiple areas at the same time. And we being an incumbent out there and, you know, having a good relationship with customers, we end up getting an advantage out there. So we are competing with the SIs out there. We are competing with international players, all financial services players. So it's not that the competition is quite wide, but I think in Indian market, Middle East market, in financial services, we are very, very strong, depending on the kind of engagements we have done out or the kind of relationships we have out there. But the market is really opening up, and the digital lending is one of the drivers, and any other areas in enterprise where they could digitize which have not been digitized traditionally. Service request management is another large area. Trade we have recently launched, and that's another area which is picking up. And so these are some areas which are, you know, developing their traction. Does that answer your question, okay, Raj?
Yeah, that's very helpful. So just if I can summarize, it's not necessarily replacement of other vendors. It's more about either the processes being automated or new things or new way of doing business that is coming up, which is flowing to you. Is that the way to understand this?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And then second question is, you know, as one of the participants earlier was talking about, that the funding has come down for the startups. So globally, are you seeing your competitive landscape changing, where some of these startups who are coming into your space either have become less aggressive in the marketplace or have gone away?
So I don't think they will go away. I think the ones which are worthwhile and have a sustainable business model will stay and will disrupt the market. And then at some places we partner with them, some places we complement. One of the things what I have seen, at least in the financial services, as soon as a partner or an incumbent or a challenger becomes sizable, he gets the same, he gets hit by regulation as other structured financial institutions. So all of a sudden the business model again comes back to the same area. So I think there is a challenge in terms of, you know, smaller entities always disrupting the market. But, you know, we always find our space either complementing them, augmenting, or substituting the same capabilities. I don't think that they are going to vanish. I think this change of, you know, the challenger ecosystem also keeping everybody on the toes is going to be there in the market. That's what I think. And it's healthy also. And they also end up providing us a lot of other ideas what can happen.
Right. But incrementally, let's say if you go back 1 year or 1.5 years back, versus today now, would you say it has come down, or is it same as what you were experiencing a year ago?
See, on the business side, I don't think it was material, at least for our business, you know, right now. But I think I could say the noise is less. The noise is less, maybe. But yeah, I think it has not changed too much for us. You know, the other thing is, you know, we are still, you know, in US and Europe, we are on the fringe. We are not still in the core. We are very small part of the market. But so that's where there's a lot of action happening. In traditional markets, we are very, very strong. And I don't think so far these guys have been able to challenge us in larger areas of what we do.
Understood. And then finally, on the US side and the European side, so what is not going right in the US, for example? You said that you are making some changes. Is it the product set that is lacking in some ways, or is it the sales and marketing capabilities? What sort of is the thing that you need to fix to start increasing the US business? Because that's the largest market.
So I think it's presence and sales and marketing. Presence in terms of localizing your organization, but predominantly sales and marketing. And marketing-led sales rather than sales on that, because it's a product brand. At the end of the day, somebody is buying a platform which he's going to use for 20 years. So his ability to be comfortable, knowing the company, analysts recognizing that company in a better shape, a lot of people talking about it, is very essential to close deals for them.
Sure.
So I would say the number one is our marketing-led sales, and number two is going to be typically much more deeper presence in markets.
I see. And in terms of your retention, what is sort of the retention you are experiencing in your subscribers in your SaaS business?
Yes, so I think the way we look at retention is any customer which is above 50 lakhs of annuity to us, whether it's a SaaS or non-SaaS. We almost have 98-99% retention in those cases. There is a churn at customers which are smaller coming through channel partners and on. So SaaS, since in US customers were of smaller size, some of them, so there has been a element of churn, but we still will have more than 90% retention on that level. But globally, if you look at non-SaaS customers and our enterprise customers, larger ones, we almost have 100% retention. We don't end up losing too much out there.
Thank you. Mr. Rajesh, may we request that you return to the question queue for follow-up questions. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we would request you to rejoin the question queue. The next question is from the line of Chirag Kacharya from Ashoka Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Hello. Congratulations on a good set of numbers, sir. I have a few broad questions. In last 5 years, what strategically we changed in our business model, coming into power since we listed in market, to streamline the processes which earlier were not there, in conjunction to the ballpark vision of reaching 500 million kind of turnover we have in mind. So can you just throw some strategic highlight on that?
Yeah, so Chirag, last 5 years or more continuously what has happened, but I can tell you specifically what we have done slightly last 3 years, and that is the timeline when we started working on the GSI. And the idea was not working on GSI, the idea was to find a way to enter Fortune 2000 market, and that could not be directly only sales led. I think we have invested a lot on creating the GSI enablement ecosystem, which is typically a GSI sales team out of India, which is working with relationships, competence centers, practice heads out there. Then we have augmented those sales teams out there. So it's a whole enablement, training, certification model for that. So a lot of investment has happened there. And that's a framework which will continue to give us return over the next many, many years, because at whatever speed the GSI grows or the partner ecosystem grows, we'll keep on leveraging that framework. The other thing is we have started, increasing our investment in mature markets. The opening up the Australia subsidiary, strengthening the UK subsidiary, extending the enterprise sales team in US. Those have been some other initiatives. And third have been predominantly about looking at positioning, branding, and the product, which is typically to look at how the product. So we are, recently coming up with the next, very happy that probably we'll be releasing it in this week. One of the products which is typically to address a lot of concerns around or opportunities of our mature market in terms of what people expect in the product, both of the user interfaces, compliances, regulations. So I think a lot of. So I will say, if you summarize, more and more preparing ourselves for mature market and finding ways to really succeed out there. That is where the investment. On the other hand, to protect our turf and to grow strong in our traditional markets, we have gone deep into the what you call creating multiple verticals within the same business segment. So banking, we came up with trade, digital lending products, collection, service request management, insurance, we got more deep out there. So working on two things. One is wherever we have a named account strategy, we know what we are selling, we are going very deep in those verticals and trying to, you know, protect our market share out there, expand within the same accounts and get more accounts. And on the mature market, really investing in sales marketing, GSI ecosystem enablement, product, brand. I'll stop there, yeah. Does that help?
Thank you. The current participant has left the question queue. We'll move on to the next question from the line of Sarang Sanil from RW Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, sir. Am I audible?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity. My first question is, in general, how is the situation in US and Europe right now, considering, you know, the ongoing macro events, apart from us walking away from the deals with long-term focus in US? And on the same line, if you could provide what percentage of EMEA is Europe?
Yeah, minuscule. So I think I'll answer the second one. It's easier. So EMEA for us actually is predominantly Middle East Africa. Europe is a very small. I think we just do roughly around $3 million of revenue in Europe. Just that too also in London with few clients. So Europe, we are completely, you know, starting our journey. US is roughly around, you know, 27 to 30% of our global revenue. And so, you know, first of all, generally in Europe, we have seen there is a slowdown, especially coming the feedback coming from our system integrators or partners. They are finding it challenging. They are really looking at how to optimize right now their operations. US, I would say we are still in the account profile, which are very small. And I think they have been sleeping in the pandemic era and they have not even come back after that. And so that area. But on the larger account size, where I think there has been a, you know, at least last 3 quarters, there has been a kind of conversation about that there is probably a recession around the corner. They need to optimize. They need to go slow on that. Has it affected our business? I won't say that because our share of our business is so small. I think our own actions right now determine our outcome rather than the overall global market.
Okay. Understood. So my second question is, when can we see the net DSO going down? Because in the last quarter, it was told that it could stabilize soon, right?
Yeah, so, you know, I think we have done that journey of taking it from 200 days to 110, 115 days. And next phase of our, you know, endeavor is to bring it sub 90 days, roughly around that. And what you see, when I break this problem into multiple regions, we have sorted out for most of the geos, apart from Middle East and Africa. These are the only geos. Since it's a large territory, it's affecting us still. So, you know, I think slightly it has, you know, slightly shifted on the upward because of, one is of course the higher revenue being clocked in last 2 quarters, but also on account of some amount of inability to travel in those regions. And again, the currency fluctuations happening in Africa over last 1.5 years. I think we are looking very strongly on that, and once we are, as soon as we are able to get the EMEA under control, I think we should be able to get a much stronger number all across.
Okay. Okay.
I would say in the next 2 years, I think we should be there.
Probably 2 years, is it? Thank you. Okay. So my last question is, also, what is our exposure to UAE in general? You know, just to understand the tax impact we could potentially have in case corporate tax is imposed in the region. And any comment on that? Are we in tax-free zone or anything of that sort?
We are in tax-free zone out there. I think there is no right now. Because most of the billing is a branch office in UAE.
Yeah, it is a branch office.
So right now in the existing contract, there is no taxation. But we are also looking at localizing in both UAE and Saudi in a period of time. And we should be able to come in the taxation. And there is a taxation, we don't think there is a substantial impact on that.
Okay.
So right now, I think our UAE and Africa region is quite distributed. There is no single region which is giving us. So we are having business in Dubai. We are having large business in Saudi, Qatar, Oman, and then other territories as well. But I don't have the numbers of exactly in each territory. But maybe if you can contact Dipti, she can send you that.
Sure, sir. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohit Balakrishnan from iThought PMS. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity, sir. So just a couple of questions. One was, So can you share, so what are your gross margins in 9 months FY23?
Yeah, just give me 5 minutes. Around, I think it should be around 62%.
62%, okay. Is it possible to probably share that, I mean, in the presentations as well? I mean, you share the employee cost and that would also include R&D and also I think some bit of sales and marketing. So if it's possible to sort of separate that out and just to, because as you explained earlier, probably as more subscription business becomes greater, then probably gross margin, it's easier to track that gross margin evolution for us from the outset. So if you can,
I think we can. Yeah, I can. Okay, I'll ask Dipti to look at that and see that we can. But yeah, I think you're right. Historically, see, we have been this range of between 62% to 68%, and you're right. As we get into more in subscription and more annuity businesses, it will keep on expanding.
Right. And the second question was on the your US and more advanced market strategy. So in these markets, I mean, how are we going? I mean, how are we sort of trying to go after the markets? And you mentioned that marketing is something that we need to work on. But in terms of the kind of customers are we targeting? Are we targeting the tier one customers, or we are first going after the smaller customers and then eventually going to the larger customers? If you can share a bit around that, that would be also useful.
Yeah, so it's I think in US we don't have one strategy, we have multiple strategies. So in certain core verticals where we know exactly what the customer wants, we go directly to the end accounts, which is a, what we call a direct sales strategy. So like in banking, typically tier 2 and tier 3 banks, we have a direct sales strategy. So we go and we know exactly whether we are going to, you know, or do a digital lending journey out there, an origination or any other solution out there. So this is where we have a direct sales team which is distributed across different regions in US, and they are trying to, you know, enter these accounts. For tier 1 accounts, other accounts, tier larger accounts, we are going through the GSI strategy. We are saying that the GSI is already an incumbent. They have worked on multiple projects with us across geos. Now if there's an opportunity either which they bring in or we are able to sense, then we can always go with a partner. So between, we call this enterprise sales or GSI strategy, and other is the banking sales strategy. So we have these two strategies going on parallel, and we are continuously refining them so that they deliver.
Understood. And sir, on this GSI, one question was that you mentioned a couple of times in this call that it's going a bit slower than what your expectation was. So one question is, why is it slow? And second, is there something that we can do to change, or is it just a normal evolution that will take some time for it to deliver?
Yeah, so the question is, first of all, why? If I had answers, I would have sorted out. But what we are doing, we are not, you know, happy with that. Doesn't mean that we'll reconcile to that. So we recently did an exercise with a lot of consulting companies to look at out-to-in for our GSI strategy. We are adopting those changes. We are also, you know, looking at complementing the whole strategy with our own brand presence, our own aggressive marketing in US. See, what happens for product companies, it's a general trend that, you know, at around a size of $300-400 million, 60-70% of the revenue is partner-led, or what you call GSI or other partner-led. So we'll have to go and replicate that. So whatever we are investing is the right cost to grow. So there's no way that we can slow it down. We have to find ways of, you know, aggressively pursuing it and getting returns out of it. So this is not in one of the strategies. So this is the more, you know, prevalent sales go-to-market strategy coming in next 3-5 years. So we'll have to find a way to really accelerate it. Now, you know, we do get roughly around 9 to 10 logos a year. Now, we could be very happy or disappointed. That depends on what our end aspirations are. So our aspirations are very high. That's why we are not happy with that. But getting 10 logos through GSI is also a good feat.
Sure. Fair enough. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Dipti Mehra Chugh for closing comments.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining in. For any further queries, you can connect with me or you can go to our website. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Newgen Software Technologies Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.